You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello and welcome to another movie roast. For you, for this episode, we have 1957's The Seventh Seal. I'm not sure who's familiar with it or not, but before we go too far, I'm Scott. You can find me on Twitter at xorsonx, and I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at purerockfury. And we're here with Matt, who you can find somewhere. I couldn't think of nothing snappy that time.
Sweatpantsfury at Gmail.
It's actually fever, but
sweatpantsfever.
Send all your fan mail.
Sweatpantsfury is almost better now.
I know, right? So, anywho, a man seeks answers about life, death, and the existence of God as he plays chess against the Grim Reaper during the Black Plague. Directed by Ingmar Bergman.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I mean, right off the bat, wouldn't you think that, what questions can you possibly have about the existence of God if you're sitting there with death? I mean, doesn't the... like kind of like have to coexist for one to be
presumably
there.
So.
I mean, you would think. No, Matt, you got no.
Well,
no,
I mean,
too deep for you. Or?
He is having an incredible religious existential crisis. He just came back from the Crusades, where he basically wasted 10 years
without a scratch.
Well,
he looked good.
I'll pass it along.
But, yeah, one would say the existence of death, although it's not the devil. The devil is the opposite of God. Death is not the opposite of God.
No, but if for Miami. In the realm of that whole scenario, I mean, one can exist and the other is not.
However, at one point in the movie, he's continuing to ask death various questions to which he's not really answering any of them. And he said, "Do you know anything?" And he said, "I know nothing."
Right.
Which means that death
that was the end,
doesn't
yeah.
have the answers. He's just the absolute final ending. He's the guy that leads you across the river Styx. It's his sole purpose.
Right. So this was...
just sad he didn't sound like Norm MacDonald.
This was my pick. He probably did, but, you know, with all the... since it was filmed 100 years ago, it's a little... well, not 100, but you know what I mean.
We might be alive when that movie's 100 years old.
Maybe. It's quite... I mean, I would hope, but... so, anywho... this was my pick, and I mean, I didn't know a ton about it. I just know that it was, you know, regarded as one of the greats or, you know, whatever. So I looked it up, and it's like, oh, this guy basically is, you know, death is knocking on his door. So he decides to, hey, you know, before we go, I heard that you're a chess guy. Let's play a game. I figured it was going to be these two guys sitting on the beach that the movie opened up in playing chess. And having this profound discussion about life and death and the existence of God. I didn't realize it was going to go like, hey, here's a beach. Hey, death, are you here for me? Yeah, totally am. Well, would you like to play chess first? Why do you say that? I've heard some things. All right, let's do it. And then the next thing you know, they make one move and they're on their horses going to town. Hey, where's the inn? I don't know. There's a dead guy. Hey, what's this at the bar? Hey, here's some juggling. Like, it was just completely all over the place, and then every now and then they'd
let's
break.
Let's burn the switch.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they would just, the chessboard would appear, and death would come wandering by. Like, hey, is it my move now?
Well, did you notice at one point he kind of alluded to, hey, I saved our game. Want to pick it up again?
It's yeah, like,
and he's like, I'm at the Renaissance Fair, man. Go away.
I don't, like, to me, that completely took me out of what I thought this movie was going to be, and it just. I'm not going to lie, I brined a little bit of it. And for those of you who might be listening for the first time, that means you doze off for a little bit because Brian was the first one to do it, so now it's just going to be his thing from now on.
Oh, I could fall asleep during some movies, man, believe it.
But yeah, I mean, once the movie started and I realized it was absolutely not what I thought it was going to be, like, I had a very hard time staying focused on it.
Really?
I brined the movie myself a bit, so I can't really say. But I didn't lose focus. I mean, to follow the story, I just... when you read the synopsis, it kind of... like, it presents itself as this ominous, dark story about like exploring your last moments on Earth. And then this guy is like hanging out at the Renaissance Fair, and this other guy's talking about, hey, I'll make you my housekeeper, or I could rape you. What do you want to do? And then there's the kooky court jester and his band of merry...
I feel like they spend more time on them than they did the squire who was supposed to
be... Yeah, Max Van Sydow was supposed to be the main character, and he just popped in randomly. And they spent like a good 20 minutes with the stupid juggling guy, who was terrible, by the way, and his naked kid who they couldn't find a pair of pants for.
Actually, I didn't mind the juggler. I thought he played...
I liked him.
I thought he played that role that he was supposed to play pretty well.
Yeah.
Oh, he did, but I mean...
His partner was a little annoying. Not his wife, but the guy who ran off with the other lady.
The guy got the pie in the face.
I think it was a tomato.
Hey, whatever. Pie, tomato, same thing. Food, face.
That guy was a little obnoxious, but...
He got laid, though.
I don't know. I liked the juggler guy. Like, I don't know. Like, he was just some weirdo who was like a three-man traveling circus type of show who sure. had visions, you know, like religious visions. Call them what you want. But,
and he had
you know,
a hot wife, too.
And he had a very hot wife. And I don't know. But I feel like they didn't focus on who was supposed to be the main character and the main story of the movie very often. I felt like that was very, very background. I don't know why. I just thought it was going to be them playing chess and talking
loose.
For an hour
yeah.
and a half. But that to me sounds way more interesting than jugglers and guys talking about, I could just rape you, but if you'd rather just come live with me because I need a housekeeper, that's fine too. Like, I don't know.
I was thinking I would rape you, but I could also use like a pork chop right now. So pick your poison. What do you want to do? Why does everybody have to sound like they're in Goodfellas when I'm talking about
it? I guess we'll start with the whole questions of what we liked about it. I mean, I liked, you know, some of the cinematography was kind of neat. Some of the shots and some of the dialogue was actually pretty awesome. In a funny way, though, not in like a... awesome way, like Citizen Kane, like some of that dialogue was just incredible. But with this movie, the dialogue was just awesome in a bad way, which could have been lost somewhere in a translation, you know, or it just could have really been like that cheesy. I don't know. But I mean, overall, I don't ever see myself having the desire to watch this again. So, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really care for it. So there's not much to say I liked about it, I guess.
I thought it was, first of all, I didn't know what to expect going in. My one friend just told me that it was awesome, so I said, okay, yeah, we'll check it out. And, I do have to agree, you know, it goes from Max von Sydow and then Death, and then you got the minstrel and his wife and the other guy, and then you got the other traveling swordsman dude, and it's kind of loose, and, you know, a very incredibly ominous. You have obviously it starts out with death, and then you got the Black Plague, and let's burn some witches, and then we got the crazy blacksmith guy who wants to club somebody.
that guy was
pretty cool.
He's like, I'm going to murder you, and the guy's like, oh, you can have her. He's like, well, I'm not going to kill you if you don't fight back.
Right.
It's like, wow, this is not a very committed killing here.
I know, right?
But I kind of agree. The story was a little loose. I mean, a lot of it in the middle is kind of like seemed a little thrown together. But I think that it was just shot so well that maybe that's why it's so esteemed and thought of so highly.
Could be.
Because there was a DVD, and it looked, I mean, obviously it was remastered Criterion, but
right,
it looked incredible. Like, it did not look like a DVD to me. DVD quality looked better. Yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it, though. Like, it wasn't what I expected. I expected a little more action. I don't know why, but I didn't expect Braveheart Part 2 or anything. But, you know, I hear, these guys coming back from the Crusades. I'm thinking, all right, we're going to get some violence of some variety.
Yeah.
Which there was a little bit, but...
Well, first... I did a little smartphone research towards the end of the movie or whatever, and it's interesting to point out on IMDb under the flops link, they mentioned that the Crusades ended 20 years before the Black Plague started in reality. But in this movie, they're coming back from the Crusades as the Black Plague is in full swing. So they're like, that's a pretty big piece of information that they completely just glossed over. But as far as like what I like, the opening first like 10 minutes on the beach, it's really kind of, you know, picturesque, and it gives you this kind of like empty, ominous tone, and he's on the beach and there's other guys that are kind of just scattered about, and it's quiet and kind of eerie, and then this guy in the robe shows up and it's Death, and they play chess, and then the part where his writing partner, I guess, is in the church, and that guy is painting that really gruesome mural on the wall, and he's going through the whole thing about the peasants. You know, they torture themselves over this imaginary creation that they created out of fear. Like, that was pretty neat. The part where Max von Sydow's character goes to the confessional booth, and he goes on this big thing about the existence of God, and I don't even know if I could bring myself to believe this, and what does the end mean if there is nothing there, and so on and so forth. And it's like this really deep, you know, like you said, existential crisis. And then Death turns around and he's like, oh my God, it's you. And like all that, I was like sitting there going, this is getting interesting. And then all of a sudden they show up at the Renaissance Fair and there's turkey legs and people are getting drunk and they're going, oh man, this is the end. And the one thing I did think, every like generation has like a group of weirdos that think that the end times are happening, which I think is interesting how people like obsess over the end of their lives or the end of the world or how it's all going to happen and what it all means. And I think they wanted to explore that idea because I think the thing that makes this movie famous is back then, when people died in movies, it was kind of just an immediate thing, and it wasn't done in a hyper-violent way. It was like somebody gets shot in the stomach, and they go, and they fall over in the street, and that's it. Whereas,
ow.
Yeah, it was like the James Cagney at the end of, what's that movie?
Angels.
Public Enemies, where he falls like through the front door. But this is like the first movie where they actually like, you know, explore the concept of, you know, your last moments of life. And I think that's like kind of a depressing thing to think about. And I think back then they probably didn't want to talk about that in movies. And this movie probably was one of the first to actually explore that idea. So it might be why it's famous. But I think the idea was great and the execution just, they veered off into weird. And get that kid some pants. I'm just saying.
I don't know why that bothered you so much.
Everybody in the movie had pants.
It was like a little toddler, dude. And like back then, they probably just shit. It just would fly out of their ass. So it's on the ground. You know what I mean?
There were some really good and interesting.
They didn't have diapers in the 1400s or whatever.
He said the word diapers in the movie, though.
I didn't hear that.
Not Max von Sydow's character, but that guy, Joff. He went on some big rant about why women are the worst because you have kids with them and then you got to get diapers and all this other stuff to take care of your family. And everything that guy said was like, oh, women, we should just burn them all to stake. Hey, we should set them on fire. We should kill all of them. It's like, wow, this guy's kind of the best and the worst, but he's the best for being the worst.
He was funny, I thought. I mean,
that guy, he was like the, he was like the Joe Pesci of this movie. He was just knocking out one-liners left and right. But again, he was in it, and then he was gone, and he's in it, then he's gone again. Oh, and I also liked the big thing with the monks going through the Renaissance Fair with the cross, because I instantly thought, bring out your dead!
Yeah.
Or were they in the forest?
And they're slamming their head with the planks of wood.
Yeah, they were actually doing the same chant, that be a requiem. There were some really interesting ideas that I think they never really got deep into, and that's kind of what makes this movie feel disjointed, I guess, or like it was half-baked, maybe.
Yeah. Well, on top of all that, I did
so,
like,
yeah, we all hate it. Let's go.
I like the guy who played Death, Banged Akarot.
Yeah, that guy
was
good.
He was pretty dope. I mean,
yeah, you could have just followed him around for an hour.
I might have to... look him up later for some other movies. But, you know, and that's the other thing, too. And I get the fact that, you know, they mentioned a few times when he was talking to Death when they were playing chess that, you know, even though Death is there for him, he's there for technically all of them. You know, and they've mentioned that a few times. Eventually, you and your party are going to meet your demise, you know, whether, sure, you know, whatever. So I was like, oh, so that could be more interesting if they focused on, you know, if they elaborated on that a little more. But that'll bring us right into what we didn't like. And like we've stated a few times already, just it just jumped around and it didn't stick to a main story, at least I feel, which, you know, is this guy's realization that he's, you know, going to die and he's having this conversation with Death. And I feel like that was so much in the background, it just, I don't know, it hurt my feelings.
Like I said, there were really good ideas.
I might have enjoyed it more if I wasn't expecting an actual, like, deep conversation between the guy who is, you know, knows Death is on his door and, you know, him and Death having that conversation about life, about death, about God, about, you know, the possibilities of what comes next. And that never happened. But that's what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was expecting, too, something. But it was disjointed, kind of.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was just an artsy technique or, you know, it's hard for me to really say, but.
So what did you not like about it?
I guess when the movie would get all light and kind of cheeky, it was like, I thought this was a movie about exploring the, you know, concept of death and the afterlife and if there's an afterlife and the concept of God and blah, blah, blah. And instead, we're like watching these three people dance around in clown makeup for 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, I don't know what this has to do with anything. Oh, they joined the party. Okay, well, why? I don't know, because they're here. Well, why are they here? I don't know. They're just here.
Well, he was giving them safe passage to the next town because where they were originally going to go was overtaken by the plague. So
again, great, but why are they integral to this story? This is not their story. It's the story of this guy who comes back from 10 years in the Crusades, and then this partner of his, this is going on, and we're like, oh, I've seen enough death and rats and lice and, you know, made love to a million women, and now it's time to go lay down for a minute. And,
yeah.
Like, all the bigger, like, contemplating ideas that they touched on, they never really got into. They just kind of glossed over them, and then next thing you know, they're doing the Monty Python thing in the woods with the guys chasing around the guy who was fooling around with his wife, and I don't know what that had to do with anything.
Yeah, I thought that was funny, but yeah, was it integral to the story? I don't know. And it's like I forget what the Max von Sydow character, just like, hey, want to go back to my castle?
Yeah.
I'm like,
he was Antonius Block.
Okay.
And all these other characters have like one word names: girl, monk, witch, Lisa. This guy's got this big elaborate name, like, I am Antonius Block the Seventh, and here's girl, dog, and horse. It's like, I don't know. And the chess match didn't really seem to play as big a role as they kind of... It's in the synopsis, like, oh, he plays chess with Death.
Right.
And chess was there, but they didn't explain how the tactics of the game applied to the movie.
I don't think they did. It was more of a, as long as the game is going, you can't kill me, and if I win, you gotta leave me alone.
But
that was their deal. But yes, again, if you chopped up every single chess scene in that movie and put it together in one long reel, you'd have like 6 minutes.
Right, and they could have explored this whole him tempting fate, playing a game with death, and instead he's just playing a game with death. Like, he's not,
Then he accidentally knocks all the pieces over. Ugh, I forgot where they were. It's cool, I remember.
So, we'll see you later.
But they could have gone into this whole thing of, like, no matter what you do or how you maneuver or how you try to do this, that, or the other, you can't cheat death. Death is always the final end result. And
makes sense.
And the game was not, it didn't play into the story or any of the themes other than just like, hey, well, we could play Parcheesi or death. Well, chess is a little Parcheesi or death. And that's Parcheesi or chess. What do you want to do, poker, or you want to do sorry? How about we'll just do chess? All right, fine. I think they could have played Operation, and it would have been just as effective.
Yeah, I mean, the game really had nothing to do with it, and they never really had the conversation that they were supposed to have, I guess.
No. They started to, though, and that's when it was interesting. But then they were like, we'll pick this up later, and later on he's like, you ready to die? He's like, no. Well, you're going to die anyway. All right, I'll see you later.
Yeah.
It kind of seemed like, and I think it was written as a play or performed as a play, I'm pretty sure. It seems like a play to me, you know what I mean, where it just kind of, just like an odd, arty play that just kind of, you know, is a lot of metaphor, real heavy metaphor, and just ominous, rather than like specific story or, because I mean, some of it does, it makes sense to me, but like, you know, well, so okay, so he's prolonging his life by trying to cheat death, which obviously he can't do. But so what is he doing in the meantime? He's running around with his other swordsman buddy and the minstrel family, okay? Yeah. Well, he's trying to, you know, have compassion and, you know, be around other people, companionship. So that's like what he was trying to do.
Right.
You know, and then he goes back and his wife's there like, oh, okay, I thought the plague killed you. But... And then it's over shortly after that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that girl, the one that Joseph said, you know, I'll make you my housekeeper, she did the Silent Bob thing at the end where she doesn't say a word the entire movie, and then all of a sudden in the end she's like, it is time or whatever. And I'm like, if you're going to wait, you should just say something like, oh, Batman's here or something weird like that.
That would be a little odd, I think.
I just thought, I'm like, oh, because as it... focused on her face at the end. I'm like, oh, she's going to do the Silent Bob thing. Going to say the one profound
Maybe
thing.
Maybe Silent Bob does the her thing.
Well, she didn't say anything profound. I was waiting for her to make some profound statement and go back to smoking a cigarette, and she didn't do it. She's just like, oh, he's here. It's like, ah, that's it.
Okay. You know, I'm not going to lie. Like, I think unless there's something else that you guys would change about it, I think we've basically... sat here for the last 20 minutes talking about what we would have done differently anyway, so we can kind of nix that, or unless you guys got something more to add.
I would have, if they, I think your idea, they spend the whole, and they didn't have to make the movie 90 minutes. It could have been 70 minutes long. But if they would have spent the entire movie just playing chess and having a long conversation.
There could have even been flashbacks to some of the stuff he's done in his life, right, or some other things, but focus on what the movie's supposed to be about is really all I'm saying, which is the chess game and a conversation with death.
That would have been a much more interesting thing to sit and watch than...
Matt don't like my ideas.
I'm just saying, I didn't need to see the chickens running in the house and the friggin' bar fight and the weird bearded guy trying to find his wife from the actor, and it's just...
Yeah, just, it's like heavy metaphor and like... I understood it and everything. I just, it wasn't, I felt like I need, and obviously with the smartphone, I could have just looked something up of analysis, professional analysis of what this movie really means, which I think I already know anyway, but, you know, it's like, I felt that I didn't want to do that, so, but I just thought it was heavy metaphor and very little else. Other than, I mean, it was a gorgeous film to look at, you know.
That it was.
I think even then, like, if you're looking for professional analysis, that's just what one person feels the movie's about. I mean, that opinion could differ from everyone's sure. perspective.
But, I mean, this is a film that you would like if you went to film school. True. Or, you know, maybe you took a film class in college. I mean, like, they would, you would analyze, and there would be just, like, encyclopedias of information on.
Encyclopedia? No, Little How I Met Your Mother? Never mind. Huh. Nothing.
Swish.
Yeah, more like fucking brick or whatever.
House.
Miss? I don't know, whatever. All right, so let's number this on so we can move on because I think it's kind of dying here. I honestly, like I said, I don't think I would ever watch it again unless there was something completely duh that I just absolutely missed, which I don't think. But, I mean, just given the way it was shot, and, you know, some of the actors, I mean, I don't know, dude, I probably couldn't go more than, like, 4.5. Like, it's not that great. I don't get the hype.
I'll give it a 5 because I definitely think Monty Python got some mileage out of it. I mean, between the monks and the parts in the forest, which I believe he kind of took from Rashomon from Akira Kurosawa, but that could be just my thing. Oh, movie in the forest. That was also in the forest, too. But the death part at the end, where actually the beginning, too, on the beach, but more specifically at the end when death is leading them up that hill, they did that exact same scene in The Meaning of Life. So two movies Monty Python got a lot of mileage out of, The Seventh Seal. So for that alone, and probably the King Arthur character in The Holy Grail. So I'll give it a 5.
Sweet.
Hey, I'm going to give it a 6.5. I mean, I don't know. If 5 is average, I mean, I just think it was a little too heavy on the metaphor and a little light on the actual story.
Okay, so as Brian mentioned, it's fairly obvious the Monty Python group got a lot of ideas from this movie. So what particular scenes may have made you think of the Holy Grail? Like for me, I know you guys were talking about other ones, but the main one is when they're all the people who are trying to get forgiveness from God for the plague or whatever are walking through town whipping each other and whipping themselves, and they're all chanting. Like, obvious, that is probably the most obvious Monty Python, like, totally stole that scene. But other than that, I mean, I get some of the other ones, but like you said, like, is it because it was shot in a forest, or did something in that scene actually remind you of, say, the Knights Who Say Nay, you know?
True. And actually, I meant to make it Monty Python as a whole, not necessarily just the Holy Grail.
No, so. I know.
But mine, again, was at the end of The Meaning of Life when they're having the dinner party in the house, and then the door is knocking and Death is standing there, and Eric Idle's playing the wife, and he's trying to go through the whole, well, our friends are all here, and he tells him, shut up, I'm sick of your mouth, and blah, blah, that whole scene, and then he takes them all outside and walks them along the beach and up the hill. I feel like that's a direct satire of this movie. But much funnier, of course.
I say just burning the witch. They should have went into the whole explanation of the witch is heavier than this duck, therefore she's a witch, because a witch can, a duck can float on water.
What do you burn apart from witches? More witches?
Therefore a witch is made of wood.
She turned me into a newt.
Yeah.
I mean, I got better.
That all would have been nice, too. The Seventh Seal is, you know, whether you like it or not, it's a Criterion Collection movie, and I don't know if that means anything to anybody out there, but, you know, I know at least two of the people at this table, it's kind of a cool thing. So if you could have 3 Criterion Collection movies to add to your collection, what would they be? The third one off the bat, I mean, almost got to go Chasing Amy.
You don't have that?
I don't think so.
So a movie that I don't own?
Oh, my God.
It's, or I mean, I don't own it on Criterion.
Just that you don't have on Criterion, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I just, because, you know, it's like,
I mean, there's hundreds of them, and I don't know them all, so.
Weekend at Bernie's.
Is that on there?
I don't know.
We'll assume that it is.
Yes, it's on there. No, I don't know. It should be. It should be.
But I wasn't about to go through 40 pages of movies to pick 3, so I just went through about 10 pages and picked 3.
Oh, that's fine. My number 3 would be 12 Angry Men by Sidney Lumet. Or Sidney Lumet. I don't know how you pronounce it. It sounds like
Lumet. It's probably Lumet, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a decent. I like that movie.
I've actually never seen it, but I know it's like pretty famous and infamous. Or and actually, I believe it's Gregory Peck, too. Am I not?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
Henry Fonda?
Like, isn't that Henry Fonda?
I like Henry Fonda, so I'd have no problem giving that a whirl anyway. But I like Sidney Lumet's movies, or Sidney Lumet's movies.
I think it's Lumet.
Either way, I've always liked his movies, so I would definitely want that in my collection, I think.
Yeah, I'll actually take back my Weekend at Bernie's and go a little more legitimate pick, which would be Glengarry Glen Ross.
Ooh, all right.
Because all the extra footage would probably be pretty bitching.
I love that movie just for the Alec Baldwin part.
So I've heard.
Have you ever seen it?
I've seen that part.
Part is so good.
I think Matt brought it over, and I put it on.
I wrote a one-act play called Glengarry Glen Ross versus Frankenstein in my literature class, where the Jack Lemmon character goes in, and he's trying to sell real estate to Dr. Frankenstein.
Nice. Actually, if you could dig that up, I think we should run through it on the show. We'll do like a radio broadcast
on it.
Yeah.
We'll do like a taser raid.
Totally, I'll totally do that.
I'll try and find it.
Okay.
Jack Lemmon was like the old Gil of that movie.
He is old Gil, yeah.
Come on, I need a sale. Give me that sale.
The number two for me, I actually, over the years of downloading films, this is one of them I actually have downloaded. But I'd still prefer to own the actual item. Is Crumb.
Love it. Bought it.
If you're not aware, it's a documentary about the comic book artist and creator Robert Crumb. He's kind of an out there kind of guy, but it's
that's barely.
I don't want to go too much into it, but yeah, he's a fascinating fella if you are interested in comic books or anything like that. But
very weird guy.
Yes. So, yeah, I'd like to own that.
My number two, I actually just found today on the list, and it's Ace in the Hole from Billy Wilder. It's Kirk Douglas plays a down-on-his-luck newspaper reporter who ends up in Albuquerque and comes up what he thinks is the scoop of a lifetime. So I saw Kirk Douglas, newspaper, Albuquerque, down-on-his-luck, and I was like, oh, I got to see that. That sounds amazing. If he's even half as interesting as he was in Paths of Glory.
Sounds good, yeah.
Swish.
Number two, I'm going to have to go Chinatown because I love that movie.
Yeah, yes.
I'm sure the Criterion version would be amazing and all the extra stuff
that
I would dork out on.
That is a really good example of more, it's old now, but post-Vietnam noir?
Yeah, in color, yeah, right.
I haven't watched
it. I don't know what that would
time.
Be considered, but I mean, just because it's not in black and white doesn't mean it's not noir, but it's just. What noir means shadow, right?
It means, well,
black or shadow.
I mean, yeah, it sprung about. Film noir means black cinema or like dark themes, dark characters, dark, you know, moody. No happy endings. That's
well, I always kind of got it from the lighting, too, because it's always.
That,
just,
too. Yeah.
They use that a lot just for texture and, you know, throw some blinds in there or, you know, there's always a street lamp.
Brian De Palma's good for that stuff, too, sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
Carlito's Way, nailed it.
And, you know, I'm sure if I went through the entire list of Criterion movies, I could probably find something else, but I feel a solid number one choice would be Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh, my God. That just came out on Criterion, too.
I mean... I'm not going to lie. I think Grand Budapest is better, but Moonrise Kingdom is still amazing.
It's like, yeah, it's like 1 versus 1.25. I mean, they're both really good movies.
Yeah. But, yeah, I really liked Moonrise Kingdom, and I actually feel like I need to watch it again because it's been a while.
I agree. That movie's pretty excellent. My number one is Throne of Blood by Akira Kurosawa.
Good one.
I don't know. Sometimes I get in the mood for old samurai movies. And
I don't disagree.
That guy was kind of like the master of...
puppets?
Yes. No, he was like widely regarded as one of the best filmmakers of all time from any region of the planet.
One.
So, and if you've ever seen Rashomon, that's like...
also good.
Yeah. Such a good, like, super small, just interesting movie.
Well, my pick is pretty obvious, but it's got to be Dr. Strangelove. And even though I've watched the Criterion Collection version not too long ago and watched all the extras, I would prefer to own it because that was the question.
Yeah. Nailed it.
That way, like, I could have a Ferris Bueller day and not go to work and be like, Dr. Strangelove, nailed right!
All right, well, let's make that happen. I want to see you live your dreams.
I want to see you see that movie again because I want you to like.
No, if I ever watch it, I should say when I watch it again, I'm going to watch it by myself.
I want you to love that movie.
That was funny, even though I felt bad for ruining it for Scott, but me and Brian were laughing so hard.
Well, okay, let me run this down for the people out there so they don't think whatever. But, like, basically, they're telling me how amazing this movie is. We need to watch it. So I put it on. And for the first, like, 20 minutes, these two wouldn't stop talking. So I missed, like, the first 20 minutes. And then the rest of the movie, they're just cackling like idiots before anything happened. And they kept yelling something about bodily fluids. And I was, by that point, I was so taken out of it that I was like, this movie, I don't even want to watch. I
fell asleep. It's so good, though. It's got to be one of the funniest, like, dark movies ever made.
I'll watch it one day, but I'm not going to watch it for the first time with you guys. Sorry. Not going to happen.
It's so amazingly quotable, too. That's the hilarious part about it. I mean, you don't think of quotable when you think of Stanley Kubrick, but that movie is, like, loaded with it.
Are you kidding me, dude? People quote Stanley Kubrick all the time.
Really?
Bit of the old ultraviolence.
Between that and, you know, there's that other stupid movie where things happen. The army one that you didn't really care for.
Paths of Glory?
Full Metal Jacket. I love the first half.
Right. Dude, people quote the shit out of that.
They're fine. I was thinking more along the lines of 2001 or The Killing.
I was going to say 2001.
I don't hear anybody. Oh, here's Johnny or whatever.
No.
All right, fine. I'll shut up.
All right, so do we have a list in front of you for what we're doing next week?
Next week, I believe, because of Thanksgiving, we'll be taking a slight sabbatical. We'll only be doing one episode because, like I said, we come out on Wednesdays and Fridays. So we're going to just do one episode in honor of Thanksgiving.
It's going to be Thanksgiving, Charlie Brown.
Native American Genocide Day.
No, we're going to do Kiss Me Deadly by Robert Aldrich. Director. It's based off of a Mickey Spillane novel.
Mike Hammer.
Oh, I thought it was based off a Lita Ford song.
You wish.
Dude, right? All you didn't know was Mike Hammer. That's pretty much it.
Okay, so there you have it.
Yeah, Robert Aldrich, written by Mickey Spillane.
Alrighty then. So don't forget to tune in next week for, well, on Monday we'll have the comic roast, and then Wednesday we'll do Kiss Me Deadly, and we will take a break day after Thanksgiving, so enjoy, and we'll see you then.
You are now leaving the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.